The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goertz.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this Wednesday, May 22nd, 2024. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins, with you for the next 2 hours right here on ESPN 106.7. Alongside me in the studio, as he is every Monday, Wednesday, Friday, it's your favorite uncle, Uncle T-Bone. What's up, man? Great to have you back in the studio.
Oh, it's great to be back here on this Wednesday afternoon. Beautiful day on the plains once again.
It's getting hot outside,
man. Starting to get a little heat going out there, a little heater. And it will be very, very toasty here shortly. So just sit back and wait. We are approaching summer at a rapid pace. Give us a call at 334-321-1390. You know, this is the time of year when kind of things begin to simmer down. And I've already heard people on all kinds of shows around the state this week just pining for football season and even a little depressed because, you know, baseball is beginning to wind up and the end of the calendar year for sports is beginning to wind up. And I kind of like this time of year. I think it gives everyone a big, sports-wise, gives everyone a chance to take a big, deep breath, reflect on what we've been through for the calendar sports year and look ahead to what's coming. So there's going to be a lot of what-if talk, I anticipate, for the next month or so until about 4th of July, and then it's practically football season. I mean, Jacob, we've got players suing universities. We've got NIL settlements about to occur with the NCAA. There's a lot going on, and recruiting rankings are being updated as we speak. Congratulations to Opelika defensive lineman Malik Autry and Auburn commit gaining that five-star over there on 247.
Yeah.
So there's just a lot going on, my man. I don't know what people are worried about. We can talk all day about everything that's going on.
Oh, and we're going to do that here in the next 2 hours on ESPN 106.7. As Uncle T-Bone said, phone lines are open. We want to hear from you. 334-321-1390. No Jordan Hill today. We will kind of back off from that for a little bit. We'll talk to him here and there throughout the summer when there's updates getting on to SEC Media Days, things like that. But since it is a little bit slower over in Athens, we will take a break from that and bring him on periodically throughout the summer. And, of course, pick back up with him closer to football season. But something that I talked about yesterday and what seems to still be some of the biggest news in college football right now, Uncle T-Bone, something that you wanted to comment on, is former Florida commit Jaden Rashada suing Billy Napier, the head coach. We've got a head football coach getting sued and the boosters behind him and his program being sued by Jaden Rashada because he says he lost out on almost $14 million that they did not pay him, including what he was guaranteed from the University of Miami for $10 million before he then ended up at Arizona State, and now he's back in the SEC. But what a wild story this is. I had a lot to say about it yesterday, and I'm sure you have some things to say here today.
Well, we were talking about it, you know, pre-show, doing a little prep, and these kids jump around so much. We had to go ahead and reconfirm that he's at the University of Georgia now. And this was a big-time quarterback recruit that initially was going to go to Florida, and I guess some things just didn't quite work out with this NIL deal that he claims he was promised, ended up at Arizona State. Now he's at Georgia a year later after spending his freshman year at Arizona State, and he's filing a lawsuit for $13.85 million, basically.
That's insane.
And lost wages. I didn't know that employees could be – college footballs are employees for lost wages, but then to throw in the fact that he's trying to sue Florida and a few boosters, and a staffer there for what he missed out at Miami, which, I mean, would there have been a guarantee that that money would have been there anyway? I think it's just a sign of the times. Quite frankly, I think it's a pretty bad look on this kid's part. We talked about whether or not, you know, Kirby Smart knew. I mean, this is Georgia, Florida, man. This is a huge rivalry. And now a player who's at Georgia suing somebody at Florida. Can you imagine? Let's play the what-if game here just right out of the chute, Jacob.
I love it.
If some player, if Aiden Holloway, okay, sued Auburn University on top of everything else and him being at Alabama, and he just went ahead and sued Auburn University to put the cherry on top of all that Sunday. What?
Yeah, I mean, it's the whole situation in itself is just it's just so crazy because, again, you have an SEC head football coach being sued by a player, not for like mistreatment on the field or any allegations like that. We're talking money that was promised that was then backed off on. And a lot of this was from Billy Napier. And a lot of this was from the boosters. You've got car dealerships here. You got some big names in that Florida football booster club that guaranteed some money, guaranteed a lot of money. And then they started thinking about it. They were like, whoa, wait a minute. I don't know if we want to pay all that
allegedly
to this kid.
Allegedly guaranteed money.
Yeah. And a signing bonus for him to pick the Gators on signing day. And just the story itself is one of the craziest things, and I recommended people to go to ESPN.com yesterday. I'll do the same thing today. Go and read that article. It's got the entire timeline down from a couple of writers at ESPN.com, and it will blow your mind. And here we are. This is the time that we're – this is the day and age that we're in where players are being told they're going to be paid double-digit millions, Uncle Tebow. We're not talking about $10,000. He's suing them for almost $14 million. I just can't wrap my head around it.
Over at Yahoo Sports, John Talty, he's at CBS Sports, James Morgan with a UGA Wire. Over at Yahoo Sports, headline, Kirby Smart reportedly gave his blessing for Jaden Rashada to file a lawsuit. I'm sure Coach Smart appreciates that being out in the public.
Yeah, I mean, sure.
Him and Napier are boys.
Yeah.
They all coach together in that little Saban club up there around, you know, 15, 16, 17. We're all him and Jeremy Pruitt.
Oh, there's a ton
Lane
of them.
Lane Kiffin. I mean,
and that Saban coaching tree.
Napier
yeah.
And all these young guys that were up there. It was I think it's the 17 staff that was just so ridiculously good. And there's some interesting comments in here, though. This guy who's being sued, one of the guys is apparently the biggest Florida booster. And people don't know this, that their booster club's called the Bull Gator Club. It's a bunch of heavy hitters, but Rashada quote is suing Billy Napier, that's the head coach, along with Florida booster Hugh Hathcock and his automotive company and former Gator staff member Marcus Castro Walker over failed name and image likeness that would have paid Rashada $13.85 million
because he was planning on going to Miami, where he claimed they had almost $10 million in NIL deals put together for him. And Florida came in and said, because of this Hathcock guy and his car dealership, they said, oh yeah, we can do better. And then, as it reads to me, they started understanding and realizing this is a lot of money. And I think, and you can correct me if I'm wrong on this, it seemed like the Hathcock guy was going to write off a lot of that money through his dealership and then decided he didn't want to do that. And Rashada was like, well, you promised me all this money, and there was some clause in the contract that they had where it was a loophole, and basically they got out of it, and Rashada was,
so there was a
upset.
Contract.
Yeah, I mean, there was an agreement with all of this, and there was something in there where they were able to pull some strings and get out of it and not have to give him his money, but he had already signed. He was already with Florida. He had said he was going to play football at Florida. And
listen to this accusation in here from Team Rashada, from their legal team. Hathcock, on behalf of himself and Velocity Automotive,
which is, that's his dealership,
Castro Walker and Coach Napier orchestrated and executed a fraud upon Jaden and were substantially and knowingly assisted by one another in carrying out the fraud. Each of their individual schemes would not have succeeded without assistance from one another. Let me tell you what, if I'm this Hathcock guy, I'm countersuing. I'm going after this kid.
For what? I guess that'd be...
We're going to find something.
Yeah. Well, that's just...
Filing a frivolous lawsuit. I don't know.
Yeah, that's some wild language, man.
I mean, that's pretty dang inflammatory right there.
Yeah, that lawsuit is saying Florida, Billy Napier and his boosters tried to scheme a kid to come to their school.
Bunch of schemers.
Yeah, and I'm not saying it's clean, and I'm not saying that today's NIL world is anything of in the right and that it's not dirty, but... I mean, come on. We're not really thinking that a head coach and his boosters are trying to trick a kid to come to Florida. Because how is that going to benefit you? If you're the head coach and the boosters, it's like, hey, we'll give you X amount of dollars. Come play for us. Okay. Signs on the dotted line. Ha ha. Just kidding. We got you.
Hardy har har. Got him.
We're not paying you money, but good luck. Come out for spring practice. Like, that doesn't make any sense to me, Uncle T-Bone. And they're not going to try and do that and trick a kid into coming to play football to guarantee him money and then pull that back and hope that everything's going to work out, because you're going to have a situation just like this.
This type of situation is just a gold mine for the purists out there who have been building up straw man after straw man argument on why NIL is the devil and going to be the ruination of not just college football, but the entire free world. That one day there's going to be a kid that's going to be promised something. He's not going to get what he's promised, and it's going to ruin a recruiting class. Whatever. I mean, again, to me, it's all part of the free market, and the free market will work its way out. And if Florida was filled with a bunch of schemers and their coaching staff and in the Bull Gator Club and their head football coach to try and trick – to play tricks on potential recruits to come to Florida and then pull the rug out from – the word on that gets out really quickly.
Yeah, your reputation's through the floor.
And
like, oh, they're not – their words mean nothing. That's right. That's how that's going to get around is, oh, yeah, oh, if Florida promised you something, don't take it because they're not good for it.
Any business that is into that type of nefarious, reputable dealings is going to – quickly become it's just going to get around on the local coconut circuit, right? I mean, yeah. it's if there's a restaurant and the people that work there are rude and they have terrible service and the food ain't any good, people are going to hear about it real quick.
It's like that one place down on – oh, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, that one place that doesn't partner with us here.
Yeah, right? Yeah, that one place that – yeah, no free pub here. Yeah. I look at it as like almost like a construction business too. It's like, okay, if this – there's this construction company that they'll make a bunch of deals, but then they're not good for their work and their money never lines up and the contracts are never right, what they say. Like, that gets around. It's like, okay, word on the street is don't partner with that construction company. That could be the case here. But this doesn't sound like Florida didn't have the money. And I think that's where a lot of people were concerned early on with NIL was that all these schools are going to guarantee all this money. Where's it coming from? What happens if they can't pay it? I don't think that's the situation here. I don't think Florida and their biggest booster didn't have the money. To me, it sounds like they just had a little change of heart and didn't want to pay this kid a lot of money.
You dig into this a little bit deeper, and it's not just all, you know, look, if Kirby Smart gave his blessing for this.
I bet he did.
Yeah.
I mean,
come on, man. I'm sure he just really appreciates
it. I'm sorry, did you say you wanted to sue Florida, one of our biggest rivals, and the head coach is already drowning over there in Gainesville? You want to throw a $14 million lawsuit on him? You have my blessing.
I bet
he did.
If he really did. I would like to think that there would actually be a little meat on the bone here with this lawsuit. John Talty over at CBSSports.com, he gets into a little bit deeper, Jacob, and there are some details in here that don't really look great for Florida and but the main thing it sounds like is this, and I know we got to take a break and I'll be brief, that this Hathcock guy at Velocity Automotive was – also, you know, while all this was going on and he's raising all this money, and now it's called the Gator Guard. This is an offshoot of their NIL off the Bull Gator Club. Anyway, long story short, he's deciding, you know what, I'm going to sell my dealerships. And so I can't.
That's convenient.
So I can't really have all this money going out, you know, on my books because it's going to mess up my EBITDA. And I got to make that. I got to make that bottom line look as strong as possible to sell this thing. Sorry, guys. NIL take care of you though. And here's our loophole. We're out of here.
Something doesn't smell right to me, Uncle T-Bone.
Yeah, this is a messy, messy story.
Let's talk some more about this when we come back and how this could impact Florida, how it could impact Rashada, and how it could impact future big-time recruits, because you're talking about Jaden Rashada, a top-tier quarterback in high school recruiting. Auburn's going after a top-tier quarterback in recruiting right now, too. Not saying Auburn's got problems with this type of thing, but it could lead to difference in how things are done moving forward. We'll talk about that more when we come back here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
Just underway here in hour number one on the Wednesday edition of On the Line. He's Uncle T-Bone. I'm Jacob Goins. We appreciate you being with us on a beautiful day here on the Plains. Still talking this Jaden Rashada story because I talked about it a little bit yesterday. Uncle T-Bone getting his thoughts out about it. And we're getting a little bit deeper into this thing because it is not just about a now Georgia quarterback and the Florida Gators. This affects the SEC and college football, Uncle T-Bone. I mean, this is something that is shaking out to be one of the wildest stories that we've seen in this very short, abbreviated NIL period. And something that, yeah, people were kind of waiting on. They were like, oh, it's going to blow up in their face doing all this NIL stuff. And you know what? Here we are. It has. And the deeper you read into this story, the dirtier that it gets. And we'd love to hear from you and your thoughts on all this. 334-321-1390. We'll relate this to Auburn in just a second.
Mm-hmm.
But on ESPN.com, again, there's a story up right now where you can go, and it basically is what you need to know and what comes next. And it was written yesterday and updated yesterday morning. Let me read you just this. Under the headline that says, could the Gators face any NCAA repercussions from Rashada's claims? And here's the first two paragraphs, all right? It says, the NCAA alerted Florida almost a year ago that it was investigating claims that the football program had violated recruiting rules, according to documents obtained by the Associated Press. ESPN's Mark Slaybaugh confirmed the investigation was related to Rashada's recruitment. So this has already been on the mind of the NCAA. They've been on this for over a year. Now, are we surprised that nothing has come of this? No, because the NCAA is terrible at their jobs. But this goes on to say in the article, Rashada claims in his lawsuit that Napier directly promised Rashada a $1 million payment from a booster if he signed with Florida.
Good Lord. Which,
if you didn't know, that is a violation of the rules from the NCAA. Okay?
Dang.
That's a violation. You cannot do that. Now, doesn't mean others don't do it, but Rashada put in his lawsuit that Billy Napier guaranteed that. And you know what? There's probably a pretty good chance that that happened because you got to do what you got to do to get the best recruits nowadays. At least that's what's going on down at Gainesville.
Oh, I remember, I think a few years ago, Jacob, around these parts, that there were a lot of people out there that really wanted Auburn to hire Billy Napier. Not saying he probably wouldn't have done a better job than Brian Harsin. But he was high up on the list when Gus Malzahn was let go to take over here on the Plains.
One of those up and comers, yeah.
Yeah, and the reputation of being a fierce recruiter. I guess I see why now. And quite frankly, all I can say is thank God he's not here.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, really, for small blessings, because you know I'd have much rather had Billy Napier obviously than Brian Harsin, but. Man, this guy just doesn't seem, if any of that's true, to have it together. And unscrupulous doesn't even begin to, when I first started reading this story, I was kind of on Team Florida side, but going through this more and more and talking through it here on the line, give us a call 334-321-1390, I'm beginning to kind of pivot here and think, wait a minute now, this kid, I mean – you know, you think Kirby Smart's really going to put his name on something like this unless it's got some legs to it?
And that's kind of where I'm leaning to is like, man, Rashada didn't get lawyers together and put together a $14 million class action lawsuit against Billy Napier and the boosters at Florida if there wasn't some truth behind it. Like, coming up with all this off the top of your head and hoping that it works, I just don't think that's how this is going down. And here's what's crazy. You look at this from just a pure football perspective. Man, Billy Napier's fighting for his job.
Oh, he's in deep trouble.
I mean, he's fighting for his life right now in Gainesville after a disappointing two seasons going into what could be the hardest schedule in college football. He's already on the verge of getting fired. But if all this starts coming out and is somehow true,
they just fire him.
I think they have no choice.
You have no choice. He's out of there.
And they could save a lot of money by doing that, I'm sure.
I mean, you got to wonder right now if officials at the University of Florida are just hoping that some of this, if it is true, you know, that it just comes on out before the season starts and they can just go ahead and can him.
Man.
With cause.
Well, it would, yeah.
You can't operate as a head coach or an employee of any organization, especially one like Florida football and the big time NCAA and college football and as a con man, basically.
Yeah.
Conning recruits. I mean, listen to this schedule to add just the misery to what's happening down there. I mean, this is a bad situation down in Gainesville. They'll open up with Miami at home, get a break against Samford at home, somehow get a third game at home against Texas A&M. Then they go to Mississippi State, Central Florida. They're going to give Florida all they want. That'll be like their Super Bowl. And then you got at Tennessee, at Kentucky, Georgia, at Texas, LSU, Ole Miss, Florida. Goodbye, Billy.
Yeah, see you later.
You're done.
And here's the thing.
Stick a fork in Billy Napier in Florida, folks. He's through.
Yeah, he's well done down in Gainesville, I think. And Florida is going to be looking for any possible way to fire him with cause, because if they fire him without cause, this was written in September a year ago, last year when Florida lost to Kentucky and everything really started to unravel down there. He signed back in 2021. His contract that he signed was 7 years, almost $52 million. All right, so a $52 million contract over 7 years at Florida. If he were to be bought out and fired, the University of Florida would owe him 85% of his total remaining annual compensation through the otherwise unexpired term. So if they were to fire him without cause, they would owe him 85% of the contract that they owed him. Plus, 50% of that would be owed in the first 30 days. Yikes.
No, I think that they're going to save some money here and probably be able to move on and shoo him out the door. That's
$7.4 million a year.
My question is, do you allow Scott Strickland, the AD down there, to make the next hire? Because this one's just been no bueno, to say the least.
And where do you go? I mean, if it doesn't work out, and then you got to go find the next up-and-comer, or do you go and pay big money again and try to find a big-name coach? I mean, Florida's been looking for their next Urban Meyer for a long time. I mean, they've been looking for that guy for a while, and they thought they've had them a couple of times, and it just hasn't worked. They've gotten to the SEC championship game here and there, but they haven't been what they used to be in a long time. I mean, think about the coaches that have been down there, too, and it just hasn't worked. And this was a gamble in itself with Billy Napier.
Well, they had the four M's, right? It was Urban Meyer, then they had Will Muschamp, then Jim McElwain. Then Dan Mullen. Didn't that goofy Ron Roberts, who was here last year and only blitzed three people on the Gravedigger play in the Iron Bowl, end up going back down to Gainesville and reuniting with Billy Napier?
I feel like that's true.
I mean, what a just dumpster fire that is right now. Gator football is completely on the ropes.
Yeah, he is. He is down there as the executive head coach.
How do you only blitz three people and not push Jalen Milroe against his throwing arm in that situation with a rush?
The question Auburn fans will ask until the end of time.
I mean, I'm over the play itself. I mean, whatever.
It's a heck of a play.
I mean, Jalen Milroe is amazing. You know, Isaiah Bond pushed off. But, I mean, I'm over it. But what kind of defensive call was that, Ron?
I'm just glad you're over it.
Good luck in Gainesville.
Yeah, good luck down there when the whole staff gets canned because you promised kids millions of dollars and ended up not doing it. What a disaster that is down in Gainesville, Florida. But when we come back, we're talking Auburn football recruiting as commits and targets have seen their rankings improve, according to 247. We'll talk about that coming up next here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line.
With Jacob Goetz on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
30 minutes into hour number one here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line. It's the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. Phone lines are open, 334-321-1390. No Jordan Hill today. He'll be with us sporadically throughout the summer. It's basically summer, man. School's out this week, I think, right? Across Lee Scott, Auburn High, Opelika. I think all the schools are getting out this week. And it's flirting with 90 degrees outside. That sounds like summer to me. But as we pivot into a different conversation, 247, of course, one of the big recruiting websites, and it doesn't matter which one you use, but we're talking 247 in this particular instance. They have updated their recruiting rankings, and there's a lot of Auburn targets in here for football, some big time Auburn commits in here as well, and so wanted to highlight some of these. And first, we'll talk about the Auburn commits. With Malik Autry from, you mentioned this in the open, Uncle T-Bone, right here in the Opelika area, from Opelika High, who went from number 34 to number 29. So he's now a top 30 player in the 247 rankings on that defensive line. And that's just one of the many guys that's coming in for Auburn. And, man, isn't it just awesome to see guys like that not only get the bump they deserve, but to know that they're going to be playing on Auburn's defensive line for the next 3 or 4 years? That is exciting to me.
Well, I mean, he's not on campus yet, so you can't ever count your chickens before
in today's before they world. Come home. But, yeah, I feel pretty good about this one. But.
Yeah, I do too. I mean, he's been a long, long time Auburn recruit. Auburn has been on him for forever, it seems like, and has, you know, look, Coach Freeze and this staff, they do as good a job recruiting as any staff in my lifetime at Auburn. Now, I know that there's still a long ways to go, and Pat Dye and them were fantastic. Tommy Tuberville and that staff were fantastic. But this staff puts a complete emphasis, numero uno, on acquiring talent.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when you got the likes of Charles Kelly coming onto your staff as well, I mean, he's a big-time recruiter.
Oh, no doubt about it.
DJ Durkin's a big-time recruiter.
And recruits have loved him so far.
Absolutely. And but you don't hear the criticism as much anymore about that hire, even locally, from some of the purists, do you, Jay?
Yeah, there was a lot of noise when that hire was made about his past and about how how it looked for Auburn and all that. But, I mean, I think everybody could agree. When you just look at him from a recruiter and from his coaching abilities, the guy's got it.
Players love him.
They do. Players have loved him. They've loved the scheme so far.
To have him.
He's a great coach.
I mean, I mentioned that Ron Roberts earlier. Thank goodness. Mm. He's out of town, and we got – I mean, can you imagine if we'd had DJ Durkin last year? I guarantee you we'd have won one extra game at least.
I'd say so, yeah.
And that, to me, he's the type guy that on the long haul, that's somebody you want to keep your eye on as a head football coach. I think that much of him.
Of Durkin to get back into being a head coach?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, I think – I mean, I think so. Unless – as long as there's a program that's, again, willing to – take a chance on him again, right? Because of the pass that he had and whatever. But yeah, I mean, he's honestly.
Hasn't he paid his, you know, price for what happened at Maryland by now?
That's up for everybody else's interpretation, I guess. I would say so.
Yeah, I mean, would too. I mean, hate to kind of hijack the conversation. We were talking about a commit, but anyway, the staff that Auburn has right now, it is filled with top notch elite recruiters. And that's what it takes, man. And if you look over, you were talking about 247 over at Auburn Undercover, Jason Caldwell and all them over there, fantastic job they do. Auburn is currently ranked 9th in the nation with 11 commits in next year's class. one spot behind our good friends in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, over there on Rivals, Brian Matthews, and the great job they do over there and that staff. Auburn is ranked 10th and one spot ahead of our good friends over in Tuscaloosa, Alabama at 11. So, look, they're in the top 10. Some of the comments I saw, Hugh Freeze and that staff, they wanted to get Auburn into the top 10 in last year's recruiting check. Now they want to get Auburn in the top 5. That's where you got to be year in, year out to be an elite championship caliber program.
Especially in the SEC. An SEC that's only getting tougher with the additions of Texas and Oklahoma. And now you're competing against even more teams if you do make it to the postseason, right? With that expanded college football playoff, you are going up against the best of the best week after week after week. And that's why Auburn has continued to go after the biggest names in high school recruiting. Look at some of these names on here. Just in the offensive tackles, Josh Petty out of Georgia, Andrew Babaloa, who is going to take a visit to Auburn. He's coming to Auburn and a few other big name schools. He went from 15 to 14, so he's a top 20 player in the country as an offensive lineman, and Auburn is in his top 4 or 5 right now. And that's really exciting. Everybody knows this name. His ranking didn't improve, but he's still a fantastic player. He's the number one quarterback in the class. Julian Juju Lewis from Carrollton, Georgia, the longtime USC commit. Again, his rankings didn't go anywhere. He's still at number 16, according to 247, but that guy can play. And there are some big-name schools in there. He's taken some big visits coming up. And Auburn is still, in my opinion, in the driver's seat to make a flip here from USC for him to land at Auburn. Still taking a visit to Colorado, taking a visit to Indiana for whatever reason. But people, yeah,
he's got a former assistant coach contact that's at Indiana now. Mm-hmm. I think doing it more as a, I don't want to say a favor, but just as a friendship type thing.
Yeah, and so I think it really is down to, can USC keep him, or can Auburn do what they have to do to flip him? And, man, think about what this would do for recruiting if he joins the class. Like, man, you make a commit like that and you land a guy like that, all the receivers in the class turn their head and look. They at least take a look and see what's going on over here.
It's not just the receivers in the class. It's the ones that were signed last year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everyone takes notice of that. It's like, whoa, number one quarterback in the country may be here next year. Mm-hmm. And I got all these schools beating down the phones, trying to get me to transfer out of Auburn because everyone's tampering. And some schools around here locally in the state really want to get Perry Thompson back. Bad, bad. And they're back channeling and they're talking and, you know, all of a sudden you get the number one quarterback coming in next year. I think I might – that's the type of thing that might make you stick around if you were ever thinking about possibly leaving.
I think this kid's a stud, man. I mean, he's 6'1", 185 pounds, from Carrollton, Georgia. He's got it all.
Yeah, I don't know what they're doing in Carrollton, Georgia, and what they're feeding the kids up there, but the amount of talent that's coming out of that area – in northwest central Georgia. I mean, mm-hmm. It seems like every other big-time recruit's from Carrollton, Georgia.
There's so many players.
They've got to be winning, like, the state championship up there every single year.
I'm telling you. I mean, just so many – from all positions, too. Like, it's just all over the place.
Across the board. Safeties, offensive linemen, tight ends, you name it.
Mm-hmm. And this Julian Lewis, I mean, this is a difference maker, Uncle T-Bone. I mean, this is a guy that when he commits, shockwaves are made – and he comes in and has a chance to be a starter day one. Like, he's that elite of a freshman to where you would almost trust putting the program in his hands. And Auburn hasn't had that since Bo Nix when he decided to commit to Auburn as the 5-star. And before that, what? I mean, who were the last big high school quarterback recruits that Auburn actually landed that made some splashes? Bo Nix, and then before that?
I mean, I think ultimately to even come close to comparing a recruit – to Juju status would be Jason Campbell. I mean, he was the USA Today Player of the Year and had been committed to Notre Dame out of, I believe, Loosedale, Mississippi, and came over to Auburn. I mean, I can still remember a massive, like, sports page photo of him, almost the entire page of him being named USA Today Player of the Year. So, I mean, that probably Jason Campbell, but, you know, not to the same level as Lewis, but, I mean, Jeremy Johnson, people forget, was a big-time recruit.
Mr. Alabama football when he was playing high school.
I saw him play live against Auburn High School in historic Duck Sanford Stadium, a.k.a. the Duck.
The Duck.
And I saw him going up against Reuben Foster and Rashawn Evans, both who went to Alabama and spurned Auburn and embarrassed Auburn. And they were on that defense, and he destroyed them.
Yeah, he lit them up.
He was one of the best high school players I've ever seen in my life. What happened to him at Auburn, man?
God, what a disaster that was.
What could have been. I mean, LSU came in late into his recruiting right before signing day, and they threw the kitchen sink at him. They wanted him. It's not like Auburn was just the only team, and they just settled on Jeremy Johnson. I mean, they took Jeremy Johnson over the Lamar Jacksons of the world, buddy.
Yeah, and I mean, and at the time, it was the right call. Again, he was Mr. Alabama football. He came in, and in the limited snaps that he had before he became the starter, he was he lit it up in that first half of that Arkansas game that year. And then he was a Heisman favorite coming in as a starter. And, man, it was like deer in the headlights. It was one of the worst flops I've ever seen in college football. Like, it was bad. And it was unfortunate because Auburn had put a lot of their chips on that table.
Oh, yeah. They had gone all in with him. Look, it's not like he didn't have some glimpses of just fantastic play to open up the 2014 season. Nick Marshall was suspended for the first half. I was not at this game, but
wasn't that the season opener?
Yeah, it was the season opener on Labor Day weekend against Arkansas. It's a rare SEC opener.
Yeah.
I can remember a few of those when I was growing up in the 90s. And listen, man, he was dynamic.
Yeah.
He was awesome. And so, you know, when 15 came around and he played a pretty good game against Louisville in the Chick-fil-A opener, and then that next week Auburn came back and had that disaster and near miss versus Jacksonville State.
Gosh.
And it just started unraveling from there. I'm getting a lot of text about this subject from some long-term K-Bags in, and he says that Malzahn was the reason why. He just didn't coach him up right, and he ruined him. And then when he went down to LSU in 15, that was when the wheels officially came off. My friend Chuck, man, over at Fairway Auto Brokers, that's a proud partner.
Yeah, shout out to those guys.
He says the same thing. He says it was all Malzahn.
Which, I mean, that became the narrative around here was we're getting some good stuff now. Well, I said this for years under Gus Malzahn.
I know where you're going with
this. If you were not a star, if you were not a superstar quarterback at Auburn, when you showed up, you were not going to become one. You had to be great when you got here because Gus Malzahn was not going to develop you. And I began asking the question, and I still to this day, I ask myself the question about Jarrett Stidham. Why did he come to Auburn? Why would a quarterback come here during that time, during that period of time where Gus Malzahn did not develop a single quarterback? Why would you come here? Because Nick Marshall was just great. Nick Marshall did his thing like that. He just ran around and acted like an idiot, and it worked because
Nick was an idiot. Now I don't know about that, but he was cold blooded.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, it was stupid to watch because he was so good, and he was so good at operating the system. But Gus Malzahn didn't create that.
No,
he didn't create Nick Marshall.
Listen, I love this subject because this is so debatable, and the phone should be ringing off the hook here shortly. But Nick. They stumbled upon what Nick Marshall could do offensively.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Malzahn, in my opinion, always wanted to air it out. He wanted to throw the ball. And in 2013, I believe it was the second or third game of the year at LSU, they were killing us. And we go into halftime and come out, and basically that's when Auburn starts running that real run first spread. I called it the run spread. There was the throw in the ball spread, and there was the run spread, and very few people ran it. And that's when they developed that so-called almost wing T type run spread. And it was just trying to run the clock out.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get out of here. Let's regroup. And then it started working.
They were like, oh.
And they started really kind of clawing their way back in the game. People forget, late in that LSU game, there was an onside kick. If Auburn got it, they could have scored a touchdown and tied. And they were getting blown out at halftime. So they stumble upon this offense and what Nick Marshall can really do. Now, he had a fantastic arm.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, he's not going to be Joe Montana and be your air, and throw it everywhere or Andre Ware and be your air raid guy. He's an athlete, man. And he was one of the best, most dynamic Auburn football players I've ever seen since that half.
Mm-hmm.
And they started working on it and going with it. And when they abandoned that midway through the 14 year, and I still don't know why. I do know they changed the rules a little bit. They went from the one-yard grace period to the three-yard on what offensive linemen could do. And
wonder
do,
who started
do.
That.
Yeah, I mean, we all know where that came from. You can't beat them, change the rules. And I really think it was more of an ego thing, and Gus Malzahn just wanted to prove to everybody that his system would work throwing the ball first.
Mm-hmm.
And that's and perhaps that's how he talked Jarrett Stidham into coming in. This will work with a quarterback like you. We just missed on these people, or you know, and it was they just didn't live up to expectation. My system works, and it did in 17. You know, they were strong in 17 by the end of the season. Kerryon Johnson doesn't get hurt. They probably win the SEC championship, and they're in the college football playoffs.
Well, if other running backs don't get hurt, too, that's why Kerryon Johnson got hurt, because he ran him into the ground.
Well, I mean, exactly.
I mean, so, he ran Kerryon Johnson to death in 2017.
You know, I'll say this about Jarrett Stidham. I mean, he was talented enough. He's still in the NFL.
But I don't think he got better at Auburn. I think he was the same quarterback.
I mean, I think he got better in 17 as the season went on. But they got to remember, too, that defense was really nasty, and it got better as the year went on, too.
That's true.
And most of those studs were recruited by who? Will Muschamp, Tavarius Robinson.
There you go.
So, you know, look, Nick Marshall was fantastic. You know, Cam Newton was fantastic, right? These people just showed up at Auburn.
That's what I'm saying. They showed up great.
You know, so it's time – it's time to really begin. You have to develop quarterbacks in your system, or you're just going to kind of be a up and down, great 1 year, bad for 5 year type program.
Which is what we were. Exactly. Which is what Auburn was. And that's just,
they were just flaky.
But that's what I was going to say. As we get to break, we've blown past it. That's what Auburn fans are hoping is changing. Is the fact that Hugh Freeze is here, the quarterback whisperer, and trying to make that. Trying to change that to where, yeah, a Julian Lewis can come in here. You can show up great, but we're going to make you even better because you came to Auburn. Let's take our final break. We'll come back, wrap up hour number one. We want to hear from you. 334-321-1390. We'll wrap up hour number one after this.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
Wrapping up hour number one here on ESPN 106.7. Man, you still have more points to talk about, Uncle Timo, that you were talking about during the break about this conversation. Just we've gotten off on, I don't even know what you'd call this, just the ghost of Christmas past in terms of Auburn quarterbacks and the nightmare that it's been, the few highlights in there, but just kind of where it's gone wrong and more importantly, how it can get better in the future. And I think that's what Auburn fans are wanting is, man, go get these big name quarterbacks like a Julian Lewis in the high school ranks and then make him a superstar, bring him in and win a Heisman Trophy again. That's what Auburn fans want.
Well, I mean, it always helps at any position, you know, to have the best talent.
Yeah, it helps to have some help.
Right. And, I mean, you're one step ahead of the pack then, and it's easier to so-called develop people when you bring it in five stars instead of, you know, especially at quarterback, instead of the Sean White and Tyler Grant Queens of the world.
Yeah.
I mean, whoever thought they were going to turn out to be, you know, stud quarterbacks at Auburn? I guess Gus Malzahn did, and I guess that's why he's not here any longer.
Yeah,
it frustrated Auburn fans to death. In 2000, after 2014, when Auburn started pivoting more toward, even midway through it, away from that run-heavy zone read option to pass-heavy zone read option. And had Auburn continued to go down that road and got the likes of Lamar Jackson, who was very strongly rumored to be extremely interested at Auburn at the time. What would things have looked like had Malzahn continued to run that type of offense, the Nick Marshall type of offense, just by going to get top-notch athletes and creating such a threat? Do you think it would have sustained into these times, or was it just a blip on the radar that they just kind of stumbled across something, they made it work for a year and a half, and they didn't think it was going to be sustainable?
Well, the problem was Gus never changed. He never adjusted. He did the same thing over and over and over again and just prayed that it worked. And that's not how college football rolls. I mean, and with the rules changes and everything, he's still trying to do the same thing, and it eventually died on him. It just quit. Teams figured it out. They figured it out, and they learned how to stop it, and he never made any adjustments and pretty much ran himself into the ground here in Auburn.
Yeah, I think that I trust that this staff's a little bit better off and a little bit more in tune of what it takes to develop talent at any position and compete at the highest level compared to previous staffs.
You forgot about Woody Barrett, a quarterback on that 2016 roster. How about Woody Barrett, Jeremy Johnson, Sean White, Tyler Queen?
Woody Brutal.
Hour number one in the books. Give us a call, 334-321-1390. Hour number two coming up.
Is an Auburn Network production. You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goertz.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway here in hour number two on the Wednesday edition of On the Line. He's Uncle Tebow, and I'm Jacob Goins. Hour number two is underway. If you missed any of hour number one, you know where the podcast is at this point, right? You can go to ESPNAU.com. That's our station website. Just search On the Line wherever you get your audio podcast, or you can download our new Radio Alabama app, Radio Alabama, our sister company up in Sylacauga. Their stations and all of our six Auburn Network radio stations are in one beautiful app for you to listen to. So you can download that and find our podcast there as well. Talked about some football recruiting news in hour number one. Also got in on the Jaden Rashada news a little bit too. Got Uncle T-Bone's thoughts on all of that. So if you missed it, you can go back to the podcast. Hour number two, phone lines are open, 334-321-1390. We got on some quarterback conversation in that first hour, and this guy wants to talk quarterbacks as well. Terry, you're on the line, man. How are you?
Hey, Jacob. Hey, listen, I missed the beginning of the show. Recruiting is what happened. Did you know something happened? You were talking about Jaden Rashada.
Oh, no. We were talking the Jaden Rashada news about him suing Florida. And then we were just talking about 247 that they updated their recruiting rankings and some numbers on some of Auburn's biggest targets.
Okay. Well, I wasn't sure what was going on. T-Bone, I want to thank you for mentioning the quarterback things. I never understood why Bo Nix came to Auburn, because every quarterback Gus Malzahn coached, they went backwards.
Well,
he turned Marshall from 11-2 to 7-5.
I think that what happened in 14 was a big mistake. I think that Auburn should have continued to fine-tune what it did offensively best with Nick Marshall by the end of 13, and that was allowing him to be an athlete, putting the ball in his hands, you know, either run or pass. I felt like that, looking back, and I don't think this is revisionist history, that in 14 we just tried to throw the ball a little bit too much, and that's really where Malzahn always wanted to go and where his heart is, and it wouldn't work out. But as to Bo Nix, I mean, he came to Auburn because he's a lifelong Auburn fan.
Yeah, well, it was a mistake. I I just think how you look at a coach who's done nothing but take quarterbacks backwards, and that nullifies that. I don't care what you grew up a fan of.
Well, Bo Nix's time at Auburn was brutal in terms of head coaching and the offensive coordinators and what he had to go through during his time. I mean, the rosters were depleted. He went through the worst head coach in the history of Auburn football and had a different offensive coordinator every single year that he was here. And all it took was a little bit of talent and a coach that knew what he was doing, and he was sitting in New York for a Heisman ceremony representing the University of Oregon. So,
I'll tell you something else.
Yeah, not playing Georgia every year.
I'll tell you something else about the people overlooked this point about Auburn's 2013 team. The offensive line, they had the best offensive lineman in the country that year in Greg Robinson.
Mm.
And him and Jay Prosh and Kozan, they just were road graders.
They really were.
That's one of the best offensive lines Auburn's ever had.
Greg Robinson almost killed somebody on a touchdown play in the national championship game against Florida State. It was a very well designed play, and it was a pass play, like a screen of some sort down in the red zone, and he came out of the blue and destroyed somebody from Florida State.
They were running the ball on 3rd and 7 and getting it.
Getting not just the 7, but 17.
Yeah, exactly, and that's the point. I think it's overlooked sometimes. Yes, Miles Lyons destroyed some quarterbacks' lives, but that offensive line was incredible, which makes it even more puzzling why he didn't go out and recruit offensive linemen, because he didn't.
Right. That's a great point. It is baffling that the year that Auburn went to the national championship game and should have won it under Gus Malzahn, it was because the offensive line was so good and gave guys like Nick Marshall an opportunity to do what he did. And, yeah, he just – that was never a focal point for Gus Malzahn in recruiting. He was going after the flashy athletes that he was going to try and convert a wide receiver to a defensive back rather than trying to go and get the guys up front.
Yeah, and some of the guys, T-Bone was talking about, Jacob, Lamar Jackson. There were several guys along those lines he missed out on. He just wouldn't go get them because he was more in love with what he wanted than what he needed. And that's the argument I always used.
Yeah. Lamar Jackson, you can add him to the list of Auburn athletes that never were. There's the Dirk Nowitzkis of the world that were supposed to come to Auburn and had a chance to come to Auburn but actually never
number
did.
Number one on that list is Emmitt Smith. I'll say this. There were a lot of haters. There were a lot of powerful haters. Against Auburn in 13, you had people like Phil Savage, who ran the Reese's Senior Bowl and was a so-called color commentary guy at Alabama. I just always thought he was another coach that they had in, basically. He's very well thought of professionally. And after the 13 Iron Bowl, still to this day I remember it, listening to some of the highlights after the game, after the kick six, him talking about how what Auburn was doing was just, quote, street ball. And was this
and
what we wanted?
Nick Marshall passed to Sammy Coates, T-Bone.
Yeah, exactly. What in him continuing to hammer that home, is this what we want in college football? They tried to change. They changed the rules. They were out there saying what you said, offensive linemen shouldn't go to Auburn. They're never going to go to the pros because it's just some type of street ball. They're not developing quarterbacks. And I think a lot of that got under Gus Malzahn's skin. And he's like, I'll show you. I'll develop some quarterbacks the way I want to, when I think what should have happened was, you know what? This is what we do. Stop it. Bring it on.
Yeah.
And we quit doing what we did well in that 13-year, midway through 14, for whatever reason. I think a lot of ego like that was involved. And it just kind of spiraled out of control for a couple of years.
I just continue to be completely puzzled by the lack of offensive lineman recruiting that Malzahn did.
Well, Hugh Freeze has changed that, let me tell you.
Absolutely, 100%. He signed more offensive linemen in a year and a half than the previous coaches have altogether.
Yeah, you're right about that. And he continues to go after him. Thanks, Terry. Appreciate the call. 334-321-1390. Just listen to these offensive linemen that Auburn's going after, and I'll tell you why they're significant in just a second. Josh Petty out of Georgia. Andrew Babaloa out of Kansas. All right, those are the two really, really big ones are – that Auburn is going after, and there's a ton more that they're going after. But those two, in their own right, you know what they have in common? They're both 5 stars. They're ranked top 15 in the country at their position, not even in their position, in their class. One from Georgia and one from Kansas. And I've continued to say that this year's offensive line for Auburn is going to be very good. It's going to be underrated. I think it's going to be a top 5 unit in the conference. at the offensive line for Auburn this season.
They got to open up some more holes running the ball. I did not think last year the run blocking was even close to an elite SEC caliber. I mean, they've got to get more physical and get more push.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you talk about offensive linemen, heck, they've already got three committed.
Yeah.
If you look at this these 11 commits that Auburn has so far for the class of 25, very heavy defense, 6 out of 11 defense. Just goes to show what type of job Charles Kelly and DJ Durkin and the Crime Dog are doing over there recruiting. But look at the offensive linemen, Tavarius Dice, offensive tackle, 4-star, 6'4", 295. Carday Smith out of Mobile, that is a hot spot for Auburn that they must recruit well in to compete against Alabama, 6'5", 285, 4-star. And then you got Ty Buster from Kannapolis, North Carolina. He's 6'3", 280, and only a 3-star.
Yeah.
So they're beefing up. You got to have the big uglies. Look at what Georgia has mauled us on the line of scrimmage over the last 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And the only way to fight fire is with fire in this case.
Which is what you have to do. I mean, it's you would think it's not that big of a secret, that it's not that big of a big brain move to go and get big time offensive and defensive linemen, because man, Auburn has struggled with that over the last handful of years of not getting any pressure on quarterbacks. Run defense has been pretty solid, I would say. But, man, letting quarterbacks just pick Auburn apart defensively.
How many times over the last 4 years has it been third and 18 and somebody got a first down, or third and 9 and got a first down? And you're just like – and they just seem to get it right, like a half-yard pass.
Yep, they just get it.
And you're like, what are you doing?
And there's so many times where Auburn would get pressure – well, let me say it this way. Most of the time, Auburn would get no pressure, and they would just, again, pick Auburn apart.
It was that delayed late-pressure blitz where they just blitzed right in and ran into the offensive lineman instead of the dynamic stuff that Oregon and Georgia are doing defensively on their blitzes, where they mix them up and the quarterback does not know where the blitz is coming. Auburn was just telegraphing where their blitz was coming.
And then the few times they would get back there and get their hands on him, they couldn't get him down, and he'd scramble and get the first down, like you said, by the length of the football, right?
It just drives me crazy.
And so Auburn's got to find a way to change all of that. But speaking of the offensive tackles and the offensive linemen that Auburn's going after, these are guys that Auburn's still recruiting defensively. Isaiah Gibson, the 5-star edge out of Georgia, who's committed to USC. Going after Jarrett Smith right up the road, and Thompson, the edge, who's ranked number 19th in the country. And then Malik Autry, of course, the Opelika, the Auburn commit already, that they're trying to stay and make sure he stays home. And he's a 5-star that's going to be on that defensive front, ranked number 29 in the latest rankings. So Auburn's doing what they got to do. Then it's about getting them in the door and developing them and making sure that they become what they're supposed to be. And because in today's world of college football, college athletics, and the transfer portal, somebody like Malik Autry, if you don't play him and don't make him better, he's gone. And every school in the country wants a piece of him. I can promise you that.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I trust in this defensive staff as much to do just all of those things that you said, as much as any defensive staff that Auburn's had going back to the Tommy Tuberville years.
Interesting. Say that again.
I believe that this defensive staff is more capable than any defensive staff, basically, than we've had in years.
I mean, I think the potential's there. Yeah, I think the potential's there.
I mean, look at having DJ Durkin and Charles Kelly on the staff together alone should make everybody around the country kind of take a look at what Auburn's going to do defensively moving forward over the next couple of years.
And look at Josh Aldridge. I mean, he's done a fantastic job back there with the edge rushers and stuff. I mean, he's done a great job. And then you still have McGriff back there for your corners and for your secondary, basically. And then the late addition, Vontrell King-Williams for defensive tackle. I mean, this is a legit defensive staff. I mean, you're talking about some serious dudes on that staff right now that Auburn has for defense that they desperately need, because think about those years that Auburn had big-time defenses. I look back to – I saw a picture the other day of the 2019 football schedule, and I started thinking back to that 2019 defense and how just nasty they were. Now, offense couldn't do anything, but the defense was phenomenal. That's a defense that almost let Auburn go to Florida and beat a really, really good Florida team that year. That's also a defense that almost had Auburn take down the number one team in the country, the eventual national champions, Joe Burrow and LSU, the best offense that this game has ever seen. That defense was legit. I want Auburn to get back to that level defense from the line to the linebackers to the secondary. That defense was insane, and half those guys are playing on Sundays now.
Well, that defense also created two pick six in the Iron Bowl to help win that game.
Yeah. I mean,
and in today's world, what can a defense really do? They're limited by the rules. They're limited by the referees. And this is, we could just spin off a whole other conversation on targeting right here, which drives me crazy. It's a rule that has to be eliminated, in my opinion, in college football because it's so arbitrary. And I see things like last year, and it's debatable or not. I'm willing to say that what Dallas Turner did to Jaden Daniels, and but that's not targeting. But I see calls and plays that are way less, even close to the head, and oh, that's targeting, and it's ridiculous. If you're gonna, there shouldn't be targeting. There should just be personal fouls, and if you get two personal fouls, you're out of here.
Yeah, I mean there's got to be.
If you want to call personal fouls more aggressively, that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But this the targeting thing is just so debatable on 50 to 60, maybe even 75% of the time the flag's thrown for it. It's like, how is that targeting? And then offensive running backs are allowed to just launch themselves like a battering ram, lowering their head into defenders. It's ridiculous. So what can a defense do just from that aspect, and how many other rules are stacked against them?
Yeah,
in today's college football world, what can they do? They can get a few three and outs. They can create a ton of pressure, which creates turnovers, and then occasionally get the scoop and score and pick and six and turn their defense into an offense. That's about it.
Yeah, I mean, it's an offensive game now. And defense, I mean, just think about all the tackling rules that have changed over the last 5 or 6 years in college and professional where, I mean, defenders don't know how to tackle people anymore because they don't know what they're allowed to do because you almost everybody makes the joke you got to pick them up lightly, put a pillow on the ground, tuck them in, and tell them goodnight as you lay them down to make sure you get the tackle safely so you don't get flagged for it. And it's true because defenses don't know how they are allowed to tackle anymore. And I'll take it a step further on targeting. Guess what you're doing, Uncle T-Bone? You're putting the game in the hands of who? The officials. Yet again, you're putting the game in the hands of three people that are too emotional, on their high horse, and have a chance to completely change how the game is played out and the final result because they're humans by nature and they know secretly they have that power.
I mean, it could be worse than that. You're putting the game possibly in the hands of folks that aren't even in the same zip code as the stadium.
So that are reviewing. Studio in Birmingham.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, there's also got to be a little intent there, that rule has, just like a lot of things that have good intentions, turned out to be just terrible for whatever it's involved in.
Yeah,
and I just cannot understand how they continue to prop that up, other than it's a CYA type rule, and they're scared one day that the NCAA is going to get sued. See, we tried to make the game safer, Jacob. We brought in this targeting.
I see what you're saying. Yeah, I see what you're saying. You're basically, it's a possible way to protect themselves.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, and it's like, well, you know, one day chickens are going to come home to roost and they're going to come with a big lawsuit because a lot of these players, you know, over time have suffered CTE or CTE-like symptoms. And we did everything in our power to make that. Look, we even instilled this targeting rule. You know, and look, yeah. I'm all for making football safer. I mean, I giggle sometimes when I hear people on talk shows talk about, well, at practice, they put all these shells over their helmets. And back in 1979, when I played for the Bear, we were killing each other at practice, you know, and they need that. That's just making them soft. We didn't even get water. And it's like, okay, you know, do we not know the dangers of concussions? The dangers of lack of proper nutrition and hydration in such a physical game. Can we use our brains here? But can we also, you know, be rational about how rules are instilled into the game? Because to me, it's just oftentimes what the NCAA does or what any organization does when it has some power, when there's an issue. It's not a small issue, but it's an issue. They take a sledgehammer to it trying to kill a fly.
Mm-hmm.
They just throw everything they can up against the wall to see what sticks and then walk away from it. And all us fans and all us commentaries and all us people in the game are just sat there with our hands up trying to interpret exactly what everything means.
Speaking of that, got to get to a break, but there's something that the NFL allowed, and they announced this about a month ago that I want to talk about. I don't think the college game has done this, but the NFL is allowing it starting this season in the regular season. I want to talk about that in terms of safety and what the game is going to look like moving forward for football. We'll talk about that when we come back here on ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
Something the NFL implemented and announced about a month ago, they're going to allow their players this year, Uncle T-Bone, to wear a different type of helmet. And it's called the Guardian Cap, is what it's called. And if you may not know the name, but as soon as I start explaining this, you're all going to know exactly what I'm talking about. The best way for me to describe it is the soft helmet, right? It's those massive helmets that you see a lot of running backs wear in spring ball and during some fall days and camps and things like that. It's those big puffy-looking helmets that look like it's a padding on top of it. It almost looks like...
Yeah, those were the... That's what I was talking about that, you know, they practice in.
Right, right. It's just to take some of the contact out and absorb a lot of the hit that a running back or other players take. And the NFL announced that they're going to allow players the option of using those Guardian caps in regular season games to, quote, enhance their protection against head injuries.
I mean, good.
Yeah. I didn't know this.
Those are the type of safety issues in the game that I'm all for.
Yeah.
If somebody wants to wear padding like that, you know, to protect themselves against CT. I mean, do we not know the dangers of concussions now?
Yes, I mean, look
we
at
do.
It. Yeah.
And I understand the intent of the targeting rule to make the game safer. I'm just saying I don't think that it's applied in a even close. I mean, you could call holding on every play, people claim, and sometimes there's blatant holds that and people are like, well, Uncle T, refs miss calls or they make calls, and it's all judgment. But when you got to stop a game, when you must stop a game and it goes on for 10, 15 minutes and you got to send video back to a conference headquarters, and this call might be whether or not somebody gets to stay in a game and even get to play a half of a next game that's very important, I think you're going overboard. But these type of safety modifications in equipment need to continue, and I think they will because that's what technology does. Jacob, when they started the game, they didn't even wear helmets. People died.
Yeah,
early on in football and in college football especially, multiple people would die during the season playing the game. That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
But that's how vicious a game it is. And, I look back just playing in the NFL myself, the neighborhood football league, how none of us were seriously injured in what we did, because we were playing tackle football sometimes in the streets.
Oh, yeah. We'd play at recess outside, and I mean, we weren't obviously allowed in school to play tackle, but you'd go up and push somebody a little hard into the brick wall with the two hands. I'm just touching him. I'm just touching, right, of course. And, yeah, then you'd go home and play in the backyard, and it was
free
for all then.
You remember former safety from the Buffalo Bills in the 90s, Mark Kelso? He wore that enlarged helmet back then.
I've seen pictures. I believe it or not, I wasn't
a lot of people made fun of him and stuff and how goofy it looked. But, you know, good for him. He played safety in the NFL. He's out there having to light people up. And even into the 90s, the game was far more vicious than it is now.
Sure.
And or at least allowed to be more vicious than
that's a good way to put it. Yeah.
If my sons were playing football, I would highly encourage them to put on that extra shell on that helmet.
Which I didn't know this. In the NFL, at certain positions starting in 22 and 23, it was mandated that they had to wear those guardian caps for certain positions in training camp. They had to wear them, which I didn't know that. I didn't know that was a mandatory thing. But they're going to allow them to wear them now during the regular season. And some people think they look kind of dumb or goofy, and they kind of do. I mean, it looks like the padding or like the soundproofing pads that you'd put in like our studio we have in here, right, that you see at the movies and stuff like that, trying to keep the noise out. Well, it's just absorbing so much of those hits. And, man,
you mark my words, Jacob, there will be some teams that lose some games this year once this happens in college football, where they start making these players wear these helmets. And people will be on the airwaves claiming how soft these players are now.
Oh, God.
And how they couldn't have hacked it back in the day when
we would have survived.
We didn't even have Nike Air helmets, you know, Bike Air helmets. We you know, and these kids are not soft. Go out there and try and play a college football game right now and see how long any of us would last. We get lit up,
yeah,
like a firecracker. These kids hit harder than ever. They're bigger and stronger than ever. They're faster than ever. They're healthier than ever.
Yep, all of those things are true.
They're nutrition than ever. They work out 24/7, 365 in big time athletes. Heck, in Auburn High School, those football players are way bigger and way more ripped than when I was in high school 30 years ago.
It's
and we
insane.
Played with some big kids.
Yeah.
So the more they can do with the padding, with the equipment to make the game safer, I'm all for it.
I'm with you. I'm absolutely with you. I'm sure that'll be adopted in college football. I'm sure it's coming to where you could wear whatever it is you need to wear to be safe and still play the game that you love and the NFL level earn a paycheck. So I thought that was interesting. I'm glad that we were able to talk about that. We got 30 more minutes here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line. Give us a call. What's on your mind? We want to hear from you. 334-321-1390.
With Jacob Goetz on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
We've got 30 more minutes here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line. He's Uncle T-Bone, and I'm Jacob Goetz with you in the studio. And I haven't really talked about it today, but an update from Hoover in the SEC baseball tournament. It was all locked up at 4 between South Carolina and Arkansas, but the Gamecocks add on 2. They're up by 2 in the top of the 9th inning. It's been a fun tournament so far, Uncle T-Bone. A couple of upsets there in Hoover, and the rain has held off so far. They're calling for beautiful weather all week. I just don't believe it because it always rains at the SEC baseball tournament. I mean, there's always a time where thunderstorms roll through.
Yeah, shocker, LSU's heating up.
Yeah, of course.
You know, the postseason darlings of college baseball, they hit a new gear. They always hit a new gear when they go into postseason, and I was listening to Doug earlier on our sister station from 11 to 2 talk about it, and he said they're bold and they're brash, and I was thinking to myself, and they're the Bayou Bengals, and they also got the bats, and those bats get hot in postseason play, so watch out for LSU up there in Hoover. Got some other news also in the transfer portal. Auburn will miss out on a potential linebacker transfer from South Alabama, Khalil Jacobs. He is from Niceville, Florida. Jacob had a really nice season down there. Auburn, Alabama, Ole Miss, and Missouri all in the hunt, and it looks like that Missouri's going to snag him. It's very interesting to me. He had a visit this past weekend at Alabama. His former head coach at South Alabama, Kane Womack, is now the defensive coordinator at Alabama. There are a lot of articles coming out over the weekend that soon and imminently he would be making a commitment after his visit to Alabama, and a lot of people assumed he was just going to end up in Tuscaloosa with his former coach. Auburn made a really good run at him.
Yes, they did.
And a lot of people also felt like Auburn was in good shape there, and he ends up at Missouri, a program that continues to just be on the rise in the SEC.
Yeah, I mean, credit to them, man. That's a big commit for them. That's a big grab out of the transfer portal. Absolutely. That's a guy that'll step in with some experience, and I'll be honest,
start up there.
I was going to say, I'm not 100% familiar with the linebacker situation in Como, but there's a good chance he could step in and be a starter. There's no doubt.
I'm going to guess that he probably would not have started at Alabama, and I don't think he'd started at Auburn.
I don't think he would have either.
And so that leaves Ole Miss and Missouri, and I'm going to bet that that situation at linebacker at Missouri is a little bit more dire. And, you know, they're basically just and I'm not trying to make excuses here for either Auburn or Alabama. I mean, he may just like Eli Drinkwitz and like Como.
That's what I've heard, is everybody just loves Columbia, Missouri.
Yeah, I mean, what a beautiful place that I've never been to. And I don't know. It just seems like to me he had an immediate playing time lined up there. And in today's world, not everybody. That's been proven. Dylan Mitchell, the guy from Texas, said that last week, you know, the power forward. He's like, I'm just looking for the right spot.
Yeah, and you have to respect that, and congrats to Missouri on getting a great player. And how about that? You had talked about how he went to Alabama on his final visit, and, yeah, the assumption was, all right, well, he'll just go to Tuscaloosa, because that's how it's always been, and here we are.
Look, I think that they're – I'm not saying the barn is open, but there just seems to be a lot, how do I put this, not just a glimmer of hope, but there's a real crack here that a lot of schools, with Nick Saban leaving Alabama, a lot of schools, you know, not the big boys like Georgia or Ohio State that are always in the top five that get their players, but there's a ton of schools, especially in the SEC, Jacob, that are trying to take as much advantage as possible right now. They sense a little weakness in that recruiting. Alabama's recruiting is still really good, and I'm never going to underestimate the Tide in football. Now, I would highly recommend that to everyone out there. Do not ever underestimate them. They take that game way too seriously up there.
Yeah.
But their recruiting doesn't quite look like what it does under Nick Saban.
Mm-mm. No.
And that's not earth-shattering to say, because, look, he's greatest of all time. He's probably the greatest recruiting head coach of all time, too. I'm a relentless recruiter. But with NIL changing and the college football world and landscape changing and him bowing out, you know, mid-year, I mean, I guess in the calendar of recruiting now, right? Because the
– Sure, yeah.
You know, because, you know, June is as important a time to recruit as ever in college football, and it has
been. I mean, it's a 365 thing. I mean, there is no recruiting period anymore.
It always was for him, too. Now, there are a lot of coaches, I think, that would take off in May and June, right, and into July. That's the time. That's our time, you know. But he never stopped working.
Mm.
But and I'm not saying that Kalen DeBoer never stops working either. I have no idea. But it just doesn't quite feel like the repressive regime that you knew 29 out of 30 times you were going to lose that recruiting battle.
Well,
there's hope.
Sure. And look, that was imminent. I mean, that was going to happen. It was going to take a step back in some way, shape, or form. And no, it's not that since Khalil Jacobs went to Missouri and didn't pick Alabama that it's all just falling apart and the dynasty is crumbling and Alabama's never going to get a major player ever again. That's not what we're saying. It's just this was somebody that in the past, if Alabama went after them, like you said, you know, 99 times out of 100, they got him. They got who they wanted. And Auburn was, in the pre-transfer portal days, Auburn was on the back burner. They were the second option in the state. It was, all right, Nick Saban and Alabama, they went after everybody. They got who they wanted, and, oh, well, we didn't quite want you. We actually went somewhere else. Okay, now you can consider Auburn. That's how it was. Auburn was the reject of high school recruiting in the state.
Consider Mississippi State. Now you can consider Ole Miss. Don't even consider Auburn.
Oh, there's no doubt. Yeah, there's no doubt. Even if they didn't go to Alabama, Nick Saban didn't want them going to Auburn.
Well, I can tell you this.
Unless he knew something that we didn't.
I'll say that. Good point on that, too. Yeah, go on down to Auburn. You're going to be a big help.
You know, you're not going to fit here, but I know a place that's going to work real nice for you. Like, yeah.
That sounds like the old stories of what Bobby Bowden would do to Terry Bowden.
Sounds about right.
you know, I just think that there's and this isn't a bellwether moment like, you know, Khalil J. There's been a lot of these happening lately.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, and but they also flexed with Ryan Williams.
As rightfully so.
You want to see what Alabama, when it's extremely motivated to get somebody, can do. Look at that Ryan Williams commitment, because I don't care what anybody says, Auburn was right there.
Until the final moment.
Telling people at the Super 7 that he was coming to Auburn.
Auburn was in it until the morning of. I'm just telling you. They were in it until the morning of.
But there's hope, man. I think that there's hope, and NIL obviously creates more opportunity, and so does the transfer rule, where you can where, you know, look, I'm not going to sit up here at Alabama anymore and be third string. I was a five star. I'm going somewhere to show people what I can do.
And in terms of this Khalil Jacobs, going to Missouri, you mentioned that he may not start at Auburn as a linebacker. I'm with you, because look at what Auburn has in terms of linebacker, and then they now have that buck position too, right? You've got Jamonta Waller, Joe Phillips, and Jalen McLeod in there as the buck. So obviously McLeod's going to be your guy, and that Joe Phillips is a monster, 6'2", 240 pounds. Talk to me on him. He is a fantastic player.
I had people tell me that not only was he the number one target for Georgia at linebacker, that he was one of their top three targets for all of defense to lock down last year, and Auburn did a fantastic job getting him here.
It's a huge flip that Auburn was able to pull off. So that's the buck position on top of what Auburn's bringing back at linebacker, senior Austin Keys, senior Eugene Asante, a huge fan favorite, a guy that Auburn had to have back, and he's coming for one more year. And then you still have DeMarcus Riddick as a freshman. You have Robert Woodyard as a sophomore.
Some steps.
Yes, he has. And DJ Barber as a freshman, too. There's a couple
hard
hitter in there. So Auburn's got studs at linebacker.
Well, I'm going to tell you, and it's nice to see a lot of these young guys and get used to it at Auburn over the next, because the roster is so depleted. But these kids, I'm not saying they're going to show up ready to play, but when they get in early, like Barber and like Phillips and like Riddick, that makes them that much, I don't know, the coach is more comfortable to play them early.
Sure.
And we have to have people playing early. I'm really interested to see if Austin Keys can stay healthy this year, how much more effective he can be. Because I think that he's extremely underrated. He had that nasty hand injury last year. It held him back for a long time. I want to see him healthy and what he can do.
I'm with you on that, because this room – I mean, think you have seniors in there, sophomores, and a ton of talented freshmen. And to go back to Auburn's schedule, you have a chance early on this season to play the DeMarcus Riddicks and the Joe Phillips of the world in not necessarily relevant snaps, worthy snaps, but just snaps in general. You're going to get their snap count up one way or the other when you open up with Alabama A&M and play them against Cal, hopefully in a fourth quarter that you're up by three touchdowns. And when you get to play them against New Mexico and things like that, you're going to have the chance to play these linebackers and get them ready and get them comfortable in case you do need to call on them on a third down against Oklahoma or against Georgia on the road in Athens when you have to have somebody, and God forbid somebody get injured, because that's been the thorn in Auburn's side at linebacker for years.
Forever, it seems like. Like, I'll say this, you know, relevant snaps, lining up, you know, against Oklahoma 4-0 to start that game is relevant snaps.
I'd say
so. Any of these snaps, any snaps you can get in live action, especially if it could be somebody against like a Cal or an Arkansas where you're comfortably up and you can go ahead and turn these kids loose, those are worthy snaps.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
Those are worthy snaps.
And so then you ask yourself the question, okay, where would Khalil Jacobs fit in this? I mean, in a two deep, I don't know. I mean, I really don't. And
he'd have to come in and compete.
You better believe it.
And strap it on. Because you got two guys in Asante and Keys who were here last year. They are going to play.
And Eugene Asante is going to be one of the best linebackers in the SEC.
Well, I hope so. They also got the transfer, got another transfer in from Duke, right?
Yes, it was the – oh, goodness. Now you put me
on
the spot.
It's hard to pronounce his name, so I'll let you do it.
Yeah. Yeah, I appreciate that. And look
– you're the pro. I'm the joke.
Is that what they say?
I don't know if that's what they say, but that's what some people
say.
Yeah,
Dorian, was it Mousy or Mossy? I can't remember how it's pronounced, but yeah, the senior transfer.
Tomato, potato.
Sure, yeah, and I'm sure he's fine with that. But 6'1", 234. So just add that. That's another senior player that's played college football at a high level and knows what he's doing. And so add that to the rotation too. But I go back to Eugene, a guy that we're very familiar with. I sat down and talked with him all season long during Tiger Takes a year ago. That guy's awesome. We love Eugene Asante. He's a fan favorite, and he's a leader on that defense. I think that's the big word that everybody uses. I mean, he's just a leader back there and knows what it takes. He knows what he's doing. He's extremely smart, and I will plant my flag right there. He will be a top five linebacker in the SEC, and I think that's a hard thing to argue against.
Well, I hope so. We need it. We need some of those. This guy's one of the top interior defensive linemen in the SEC. This secondary's one of the top three. This linebacker's in the top five of all linebackers in the SEC. Auburn needs to get back to that level.
Mm-hmm.
And until they do, they're going to continue to wallow in below-average football to the expectation of Auburn fans. And I don't think that Auburn fans have a serious – unrealistic expectation. All fans right now think that their teams are, except maybe Vanderbilt, are going to make a run at the college football playoffs. I mean, this is the time when fans really get like out of line, out of whack, outside the buoys. And I did this last year when this staff came in, they did a heck of a job stabilizing their first recruiting class. I mean, it had like 10 days until – I think it was 14 days until signing day.
Oh, it was something insane.
It was something terrible. It was an awful situation and ended up getting a really solid class on paper, got Auburn back competing against the top teams and recruiting the LSUs, Georgias, and Alabamas of the world, which we were not, and just at least having kids take a look at us that weren't taking a look at us and taking those visits any longer under Brian Harsin. And then they piled on a ton of these transfers, and local media did a great job of getting the hook, not just in the mouth of Auburn fans, but down in the lungs and reeling them in, man. Like, we got some clicks here. This guy from North Texas, he's going to be the next Mike Singletary, and all these. And I bought in, and I was like, look, I got outside the booths. This team could potentially be like the 93 Auburn Tigers or the 2013 in Gus Malzahn's year. You better watch out.
It's a year one under a new head coach at Auburn. Here we go.
And then it was legitimately what a first year should look like under a new head coach.
That's pretty much the definition of it.
And I was like, wait a minute. Let's get those expectations back where they need to be. And I'm going to continue to preach that this summer. I'm not totally buying in. I'm not going overboard like I did. Ain't no way Auburn makes the college football playoffs, folks.
I like it.
That's all I'm saying.
I'll say this before we get to break. I think it's okay to buy into this team a little bit more than last year's team.
I agree with that, Tony.
Because of the roster, man. Look, dude, compare the two rosters night and day. Oh, my God.
With players, but with coaches.
334-321-1390. That's the number. You can come on in, be a part of it. One more segment to go as we wrap it up here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
Winding down here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line. Let's get to the phone lines quickly here. This guy's been waiting all break long. 334-321-1390. Andy, what's up, man? Good to hear from you.
Hey, where are you going? I'll be quick. Three things. Oh, gosh. All right, first, when's the next time you guys are going to be off site?
As of right now,
I believe it's going to be the Friday of the U.S. Open in golf.
June 14th,
June 16th, somewhere
right
in there.
I'll stop asking for a couple weeks. Two, which movie do you like better, Office Space or Old School?
You're going to love this answer, Andy.
I mean, are you working on your master's or something? What do you got going on over there, man?
Man, they were. Yeah.
Yeah. No comment is what you just got.
Radio silence.
Like a month ago, he's like, "I'll watch it this weekend." you'll be a better person, man.
Man, Andy, get off of me.
You need some one-liners, some new ones that us old people can relate to.
Hey, I'm in the off season now. I got time. I promise.
Okay. I mean, just do it for the sake of me calling and harassing.
But, I am.
And lastly, you're talking about us not going to the playoffs. That's crazy talk, man. I mean, we had Alabama beat to the last second. We had Georgia beat until Brock started playing. I mean,
yeah.
Other than New Mexico and a couple other games.
New Mexico State. We looked really good against LSU last year.
Yeah, but if we did that good against Georgia and Alabama, and now we have receivers, I'm saying 9 games.
I'm not buying it. No way.
Here we go. Here we go. Andy said 9 games. Who's got 10? Who's got 10? I'll take the first phone call.
Dinner and keg on me if it's under 9. But we'll talk in December.
Love it.
What if it's over 9? What if it is 9, though? Because I remember last year you really needed Auburn to beat New Mexico State.
for
entertainment purposes only.
I needed 6. I need it. I mean, it could have been Georgia. It could have been Alabama. It could have been New Mexico State.
That's right.
It was terrible. Like,
I think this year it's at 7.5 as of right now.
I guess I wasn't panicking last year because after New Mexico State, I was like, well, there ain't no way we're going to beat Alabama. And then, sure enough, we had them. And, I mean, there is a hole in the earth over by my tailgate by 40 where I pounded the ground with power I didn't know I had. There is a hole in the ground. All right, we're going to have.
Yeah, appreciate it. You're telling me that Auburn gave you hope, crushed your dreams, and then gave you hope again, and then crushed it again at the very end? No.
I'm not going to say the word. But we
it's
all
not
know
even
what
a word.
Means.
It's totally a word. It's a saying. It's a way of life around here.
I'm going to write a book. And I'm just going to name the title that word, and it's just going to be all the monumental, heartbreaking moments in Auburn athletics in my lifetime where it's occurred.
That book's going to be thicker than Harry Potter.
Oh, it would be a trilogy probably. I mean, it could go on. It's going to go on forever. But
you
there,
should.
But
I'm
you
got to
understand. You got to understand too. Some that word can also be positive because it was completely Jabba, just Auburn being Auburn.
That
they hired
it, man.
They hired a guy from Samford who Auburn had beat the year before in 1992 in one of their worst seasons under Pat Dye ever, 42-0. And he became the head coach, and nobody ever heard of him, and he went undefeated. That's the good Jabba. There is good Jabba.
There is. Good Jabba's making a run to the Final Four on a team that had no business doing it.
We got double Jabba there. We had good and bad because they go to the Final Four, they got the game won, and a referee doesn't make a double dribble call, or Auburn wins the national title.
You're right about that.
Thanks.
It's a way of life, man. Way of life.
It is the life we choose.
Yeah. Yeah, we do. We choose it. And you and I have the pleasure of talking about it every day, which we have a lot of fun. And we hope that you do, too. And we appreciate you being with us. I'll be back tomorrow, 2 to 4, right here. No more. You won't be here Friday, right? You're out. So you'll be back on Monday.
No.
That's right.
Won't be on
Monday. Oh, no show Monday. That's Memorial Day. I'll tell you more about it tomorrow, 2 to 4, right here on ESPN 106.7. He's Uncle T-Bone. I'm Jacob Goins. Stay safe. I'll talk to you later.